Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal. We got a little bit of a different show for you guys today. We're going to talk some basketball with Jim Polzin at the top of the show. Look at where the Badgers are at in this last week or so of the regular season heading into the tournament. We'll talk a little bit of football here with Jim. And then on the second half of the show, we're going to bring on Todd Molesky to talk Badgers men's and women's hockey, both teams getting ready for their tournaments as well. Both of them, you know, top five in the country. Badgers women are number one, Badgers men are number five. So deep tournament runs are possible for both of them. So when I have Todd on to give you guys a primer for what's going on with those two teams. So we'll do that at the second half of the show. But like I said, we have Jim on right now. Almost tournament time for the Badgers basketball team as well. Just how you feeling? You feel ready for the tournament right now?
Yeah, I was just talking to someone yesterday. I'm at a point. I'm always at this point in the season where I just kind of want to know what's next, right? Like,
sure.
I want to know when they'll be playing in the Big Ten tournament. And then I want to know, I mean, it's very different this year. Like, usually I'd be looking at first round sites and wondering, you know, what games are Thursday, Saturday, what games are Friday, Sunday, where I'll have to fly, what are the best airports to get into just so I'm ready on Selection Sunday. You don't have to do that this year because everything's in the greater Indianapolis area. So that makes it a little bit easier, but I still kind of want to know. I want to know a schedule. It's the uncertainty kind of is a killer.
Yeah. It's funny because we talked about it, I think it was two podcasts ago, that the Big Ten was going to have to make a decision soon about what the format of the tournament is. And apparently they don't have to make a decision because they're just like, well, we're having the Big Ten tournament like normal. See you guys in Indy.
Very interesting how it's all worked out. How they've, you know, like Michigan is going to end up with 17 games. There's three games they're not going to play. And I don't think it's going to make a, after that Illinois loss last night, I don't think it's going to be a factor in the Big Ten race. And for Michigan, it's a great thing that they don't have to cram all these games into a short window and wear themselves down leading into the postseason. But, you know, other schools are having to play makeups. Nebraska, I mean, look at Illinois this week. I know we're going to get into this, but Illinois is going to have to play three games in 5 days through no fault of its own. So it's interesting to see how this all kind of worked out.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so give you guys a quick rundown of the show here. We're going to do a short recap of the Northwestern game on Sunday. Solid win for the Badgers. And then there are some interesting lineup questions that came out of that when you looked at the production the guys have been having the last week or so, or the last couple weeks, I should say. So we're going to get into that. We'll talk about the Illinois game on Saturday that Jim just mentioned. That's senior day for the Badgers, so we're going to talk about this class's legacy and what this could mean going forward for the Badgers program. I'll do a quick talk about the Big Ten Player of the Year race because it's getting a little closer than it once appeared at some points of this season. And then we'll wrap up with Jim and I talking a little bit of football. Been a little bit of a slow week on the football side, so I wanted to do a little bit more basketball and hockey this episode. And like I mentioned earlier, Todd and I are going to talk about the men's and women's hockey teams, their potential for a tournament run, and then the potential for Badgers to sweep the men's and women's players of the year awards, which you look at, I mean, they don't have betting odds publicly right now for them, but you'll get the stats and where these, the top guys on or top men and women on these team rank. And it's a solid possibility. So Todd and I are going to get into all of that. So like I said, packed show, lots of stuff to talk about, and we'll get into all of it right after this. All right, Jim, let's jump into this Northwestern game from Sunday. You watch that game, and the first half was a little dicey. It's like, man, why is Northwestern able to hang around? Like, I know they're playing hard, and Wisconsin's kind of in a funk, but second half turnaround looked a little bit better. Wisconsin, you know, did what they needed to do, put away the Northwestern team that's been struggling. But just what were some of your takeaways from that one?
Yeah, I mean, you used the word solid to describe it. I think that's a pretty good adjective. Northwestern's given teams fits, even though they've got a long, long losing streak. They almost won it at Illinois. They played Purdue tough down there. There's talent there. It's just a little young, and I think next year they'll be a lot better. So to go get a 17-point win on the road or whatever it was, I think that's solid. It wasn't great aesthetically by any means, but I think there was a lot to take out of that game. Five guys in double figures I thought was important. This team's at its best when there's balanced scoring. The offense looked a little bit better. Now, of course, the caveat is Northwestern is the worst defense in the Big Ten in conference play. So you got to take everything with a grain of salt. But, they needed that win. I mean, I hate using must win, but considering the schedule coming up and the way things have gone in the previous two games, this was an absolute must win. They needed to, they need something positive to happen. And I think they can, you know, I think it's something they can build on.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it was a must win because it's funny. You look back at the story you wrote on Sunday. This team has been remarkably consistent at being 500. It's like, what, six straight weeks of one win, one loss. And they don't have a win streak of longer than, or they don't have back-to-back wins in the Big Ten play, do they?
They have, yeah, two. They've not won three games in a row since, you know, we're talking like since late December. So,
yeah, so it was just one of those things where it's like, yeah, combine that with who you got to play the last three regular season games and where you sit right now. Yes, it's on the road, and Northwestern's played some team stuff, but you have to win that game if you're Wisconsin. So get that done. But I think the bigger news outside, you know, just a regular Big Ten win was Micah Potter after the game talked about there was a team meeting for the Badgers last week heading into the game. What was your takeaway from that? Or what do you think this means for this team at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, he called it a team realization. He kind of spilled the beans on his own. And, you know, this happens probably a lot to a lot of teams, a lot of seasons, right, where things just aren't going well. They meet and they talk about it. In fact, I don't even think this was the first quote-unquote team meeting this year for this team. I think they had some sort of gathering that was mentioned after the first Michigan loss because it was, you know, so bad. You know, what exactly was said in that thing, I don't know. What exactly was gained from it, I don't know. And even the thing I like most about what Potter said and even what Demetri Trice said, he didn't talk about the meeting because Potter went after him. But I think the takeaway from that game was they did a lot of things right. They won the game, but you got to keep doing it. You got to stack these things. And one win doesn't really matter, especially, you know, no one's going to look at that Northwestern win and say, oh, wow, this team's back. You know, you got to do it against a Illinois or a Purdue or a Iowa or all of them, you know? And so I think the jury's still out on if this team meeting was successful or what exactly it accomplished, but it was probably important. I think it's always important to kind of, you know, get your feelings out and talk about it. And things clearly weren't going well. This team can feel like the you know, the clock is running out on it. And there's only, you know, they're only guaranteed five games right now. Three right. Regular season and one in each tournament. So I think they can kind of feel this slipping away and they knew something needed to change. Now we'll see if it going forward, if it continues to pay dividends.
Yeah. We've talked about a few times that it just doesn't seem at certain points that this team's like together or has the energy on the bench, especially. And sometimes you just got to clear the air with some of that stuff of like, and not always call people out, but just have that kind of forum to just let some things out, be able to, you know, challenge guys or be challenged if you're not doing the things you need to do. And I know because they were winning, I'm sure it helped a lot, but I think that game on Sunday, you saw a little bit more togetherness. You saw like Brad Davison getting into, you know, more Brad Davison, you know, usual Brad Davison stuff that we've seen in the last 3 years where he's been kind of floating in and out at times. I thought Jonathan Davis did a really good job of, you know, being a little bit more emotive and supporting guys because he's a very quiet kid to begin with. But I think at times he got to play with a little bit more emotion when you're this central of a figure on the team right now. And I also think that they did a better job converting defense into offense, but, you know, playing with energy on both sides where, you know, sometimes it's offense can get a little bogged down and you see it affect both sides. So I think that maybe that, if there was a tangible thing that you can see on the court from that meeting, maybe it was just, hey, like, let's play with a little bit more life, a little more juice to then just see what happens with that.
Yeah, I agree. Urgency, right? That was the word I was thinking. I just saw, you saw guys on the ground a little bit more. You saw a little bit more passion. But again, like, I think we've seen that at times this year, and I want to see it consistently. I want to see it against the good teams. You know, I want to see that togetherness and connected play on both ends of the court against a good team like in Illinois on Saturday. That's kind of the measuring stick for this team on, you know, is it going to be a team that just loses to all the good teams all year, or is it going to be able to kind of get a signature victory out of this? And we'll see. I was going to say the one thing that I would have felt a lot better about this game is if like everybody would have played well, right? I mean, I still think there's a couple guys that didn't. Nate Reavers didn't play particularly well. Liam Ford didn't shoot well. I think he did some other things well, but I thought this was at least more closer to kind of the team we expected. And now we just need to see it consistently, which we have not all year.
Right. So you mentioned Reavers there, and I mentioned Jonathan Davis in my little talk there, but there's some push from fans and people have been talking about the lineup right now for the Badgers. And I think Greg Gard's shown this season that he's going to be a little bit more willing to change the lineup late in the season or mid-season than in years past. But people want to see more Jonathan Davis and Reavers in the starting lineup as opposed to Aleem Ford or Brad Davison or Micah Potter, like, you know, switching out one of those backcourt guys for Davis and then making sure that Reavers starts over Potter. You look at that, Jonathan Davis in the last six games, four of those have been in double figures, 4.2 rebounds and 1.7 steals in that stretch. I mean, this guy is doing a lot of things when he's on the court, and he's got a ton of energy on both sides. And I think people recognize that as they watch him, that he brings a different dimension that the starting lineup doesn't have when he's not out there. I think you could interchange Reavers and Potter. What do you think about this idea of changing the lineup at this point in the year?
Yeah, well, I guess let's start here. I did ask Greg Gard about that after the game. And the way I phrased the question basically was, I know you don't care a lot about starting lineups per se, but the fact that Potter and Davis in particular are playing so well, do you consider, you know, putting them in there, or are you happy with what they give you coming off the bench? And he basically just repeated my last part of the question. He says, I'm happy with what they give me coming off the bench. And that was it. It was very short answer. I don't think he was thrilled about answering it, whatever. I mean, and then we went on to the next question. So I at least tried to get an answer out of him. And let's start with Davis. You know, yes, he's not starting. He's playing starter minutes though.
Right.
The last two games he's played 32 and 34 minutes. The only people that played more than him at Northwestern were Trice played 34, Davison played 33. So unofficially, Jonathan Davis is a starter and he doesn't start the game, but he plays almost the rest of the half in each half. Right. So I guess I don't have an issue with, you know, he's not going to play 40 minutes. So who cares if he starts the game or comes off the bench, and he seems to be fine. Some guys don't play well coming off the bench. He seems to be fine doing that. And he gives the team a little spark when it needs it, like 3-4 minutes into the game. So that one I'm fine with. The Potter Reavers one is a little bit more tricky to me. And I know the answer here is always that defensively, Reavers is the better player and he gives you a little bit more in terms of playing the pick and roll and other things. He's just got more experience. Again, Potter's playing more, regardless of who starts. Potter's playing more. The other day it was Potter 23 minutes, Reavers 16. Iowa, it was Potter 30, I want to say. Yeah, Potter 30 minutes, Reavers 10. And that's probably, if you're judging them how they're playing right now, the 30-10 split is probably closer to reality. I just don't think Reavers has given them a ton in any regard. He's got a total of 2 rebounds over the last 3 games. Potter's clearly the better rebounder. Potter is definitely the better offensive player. He gives him a little bit spark more. I think if I'm trying to get inside Greg Gard's head a little bit, he knows that for this team to be its best at some point, whenever that is, they need Nate Reavers. They just do. They absolutely need something from him. And I think he's sticking with him to try to find something, try to get some confidence building inside of the kid, because they need it. And this team's not going to go very far unless they have, you know, all 8 guys in the rotation playing well. And he's one of the more important ones in that group. So if I had to guess, that's why it is. And again, Potter's a guy that has proven he can come off the bench and give you a spark. So if it's not broken in that regard, I guess why fix it? But I that's the one I kept, you know, when I look for starting lineups before the game, I keep kind of expecting a Potter for Reavers switch, and it just hasn't happened.
Yeah. And the thing is too, when Davison's numbers look all right, but this, when you look at the conference play isolated with that, he hasn't been the scorer that he's accustomed to being. So then you combine that with the fact that Reavers has struggled scoring for much of the conference season as well. You would think maybe you got to add a little bit of that spark to start the game with Potter, but I'm with you. This team has to have Nate Reavers to be close to what we thought it could be, or what it was kind of expected of them. And the defensive part, I know Potter gets the rebounds and Reavers just hasn't lately, but defensively, when they teams will go after Potter, and you mentioned the pick and roll, they try to stretch him out away from the basket and catch dumb fouls on him reaching and, you know, trying to get around him in that way. And I think that's something that you can't risk quickly into a game like that, even though you have an insurance policy and Reavers right behind him. As important as both guys are to this team, you have to put the guy that you know isn't going to pick up some of those dumb fouls early in a game, like Potter would be a little bit more susceptible to, in my opinion.
No, I think that's a great point. And somebody emailed me about that too. And that's kind of what I said is, they're like, why are they always taking Potter out of the game when the first wrong thing happens, when he does something wrong, they're always yanking him. And the other day, I don't think it was an example of him doing something wrong. He picked up a foul, kind of a cheapie at the 12-minute mark in the first half. And he sat out because I agree with you. Like, the last thing you want there is for him to pick up another one 2 or 3 minutes later. And then he's basically done the rest of the half. I mean, Greg Gard's been pretty, in terms of Potter, he's been, if you get two fouls, it's pretty much an auto bench the rest of the half. And I know people don't like that either, but you run the risk of not only him picking up his third foul if you leave him in there, but he's just not as aggressive with two fouls.
Yeah,
and it's a little bit of a liability in there defensively if you leave him there with two fouls. So some guys like Tyler Wall, he said, all right, I'll play you with two fouls. And I think a lot of that has to do too with who he has around him. You can play Ford for Wall. You can play Davis for Wall in that spot. With Potter, it's, you know, if you get Potter in foul trouble and then you have Nate Reavers in there for a long stretch. And again, Reavers has not proven he can play long stretches without getting, you know, tired and fatigued and worn down. So I understand, you know, and that maybe has something to do with how he starts the game too, is just, you know, keeping Potter out of foul trouble early, I think, is important.
Yeah. And I think the takeaway from this talk is I don't expect a starting lineup change, but I do expect this minutes rotation, at least for Jonathan Davis, to continue to climb. And when you look at the best defensive lineup that they can put out there, probably Trice. I mean, maybe I probably Davison, Davis, Ford, and Reavers. That's going to be,
I'd say,
Wall, that's where I meant to say that. Yeah. And that's going to be a lineup that you're going to play in down the stretch of some of these games. If you catch a lead, especially against, you know, the Iowas, the Purdue's, like they're going to play, and then whoever they match up with in the Big Ten tournament, that's going to be a lineup that you need. So I can't imagine that they're going to mess with that, knowing that down the stretch, when they need to lock some teams down, they're going to play these guys in those key moments.
Yeah, I mean, Reavers has kind of always been their closer, and historically, he's got a pretty good track record of being a closer, and not only, on both ends of the court. Like, he has played well during his career down stretch runs of games. Now, people are going to remember, because of recency bias, the Michigan game when he did not play well down the stretch of that game. You know, He gave up 3 offensive rebounds. He missed some shots. So I think that's kind of fresh on people's minds. But if you're a coach and you're kind of judging on who to play down the stretch runs of games, especially in a game where Wisconsin's leading and defense is more important, I think Reavers is going to get the look. Now, if you're in a game where you're trailing by a couple and you need points, then I think you got to go with Potter. So it's interesting. It's just, it's not, and for the people that still want them to play together, I don't know how many ways I can say this. It just does not work. I thought you might see a little bit against Northwestern because they do play two bigger guys at the same time. But it just, it has not worked. It's not a functional pairing. And that's why
And there's really, I would probably put it under 15 teams. Nobody in the Big Ten really that's playing two true bigs that would be a good matchup to put that against. And the teams that are like in non-conference stuff and like that, one of them is probably a stiff and they're just out there because they're big. I mean, that's a rarity to see two true bigs in basketball anymore. So yeah, I don't get I see people in your mentions. I can't tell if they're trolling anymore or if they're like legitimately wanting both of them to play together, but I don't know what they would expect unless they just want Potter to be, I guess, just a pure spot up shooter and never go in the paint. I don't know how I think it would work.
My mentions are great because there's a lot of lineup suggestions from my followers on Twitter. And the funny thing is, it's not consistent at all, right? Like, you don't have everybody calling for the same lineup. And I think that's part of the problem here, is that there is no obvious solution lineup wise. There isn't. For everybody that says, sit Aleem Ford, there's someone that says sit Tyler Wahl because he doesn't do enough offensively. And, you know, I can argue until I'm blue in the face why the Potter Reavers pairing doesn't work. And people just don't, you know, just don't agree with me. They don't listen. They see two guys that averaged double figures last year and just assume that they should be in the lineup together. Well, it just hasn't been a functional lineup, especially against some of the defense, some of the lineups they've gone against.
Right. All right, let's move forward here and look at this Illinois game, because that's the next one here on the schedule coming up on Saturday at the Kohl Center. Illinois, you mentioned it earlier, is going to be playing their third game in 5 days. Started off not good last night, losing to Michigan State. I wasn't able to catch much of the game. I saw down the stretch when I heard it was close. Kofi Coburn couldn't get anything going against the Michigan State bigs, which was just really weird to see. We're just looking at the box score. It looked like he caught foul trouble early, so maybe he was out of rhythm. But it was just interesting that Michigan State's bigs, including Joey Hauser, did a solid job denying him the ball a few times and was attacking him on offense. Just not the result you would expect for the number five team in the country in Illinois that was playing as well as they were. But maybe just some of this stretch run is and fatigue is catching up with them.
Yeah, just they didn't look in sync last night for some reason. I think part of it's Ayo Dosunmu didn't play particularly well. I think, you know, he's the best player on that team, one of the best in the country. He was 6 of 18 from the floor, 4 turnovers. I just didn't think he played well. You mentioned Coburn. He was 3-11 from the line. So, I mean, they were getting him the ball in some really good spots. Just was not finishing. And I just, you know, they looked out of sync defensively too. I thought they were a little bit out of sync. And I don't know. I mean, I also thought Michigan State played one of its best games of the season. You know, I had not seen Michigan State play that well in a while. And they did play really well in the second half against Indiana the other day. So maybe Michigan State has finally figured something out and can make a late season push. But not the way you want to start your week if you're Illinois, because it is going to be kind of a haul this week with 3 games in 5 days.
Yeah, and the tough thing about it is, yeah, I think you said it right there that Michigan State is making this late season push here, and I don't know if they're a true bubble team yet, but if they were able to pick up another couple of wins in the Big Ten tournament, maybe then you're talking about, you know, pushing your way in. But Illinois looks at this week saying, okay, Michigan State, you go into the game thinking that you're the better team and not going to be that big of a deal. And then you got Nebraska on Thursday when you guys listen to this. So you're thinking going into the week, there's two quote unquote easy wins. And then we've got the big one Saturday against Wisconsin. So it could be a situation where they're looking ahead a little bit and didn't, you know, give this to the Michigan State game the proper focus, but just not the way you want to start the week. And probably not good for Nebraska, especially, but then also Wisconsin, where a big wake-up call for this Illinois team coming into this big run of games.
Yeah, because now they can't afford any more losses. If they want any chance at the Big Ten title, it's going to come down to winning percentage, right? I mean, I think we figured that out, that's how they're going to determine a champion. And I think somebody tweeted out this morning or last night that Illinois basically needs to go 4-1 down the stretch. And, you know, that's not going to be easy to do. So they really, really need that. I mean, they're going to beat Nebraska. I think I'd be shocked if that doesn't happen, but they're going to really need that one on Saturday. So I would anticipate Wisconsin's going to get their best effort. I think the one thing you kind of, if you're Wisconsin, you hope for is that they're dragging and their legs are a little heavy and maybe some of the jump shots don't fall. They got to keep them away from the rim. That's something they did not do down in Champaign. I mean, Coburn had 8 dunks. Dosunmu got to the rim a lot. They're a really difficult team to defend, and Wisconsin did not do a great job defending that pick and roll and needs to do a better job. And, of course, you know, season-long problem for Wisconsin shooting. They just did not shoot well down there. They got knocked down some shots. And if they do it early, I think that's, you know, that's important too, is just continue those good feelings from the Northwestern game.
Yeah, oh, for sure. We mentioned it earlier, senior day for Wisconsin. And it's mentioned every broadcast multiple times with a lot of seniors on this team. All 7 seniors going to get honored, even though, as we talked about in both basketball and football, these guys have the option to come back next season. You said it earlier when we were talking about the team meeting, Jim, that there's a sense, at least, or maybe a recognition that time's pretty much running out on this team. It's kind of slipping away. The season's, you know, pretty close to over with when in the grand scheme of things. do you think that last guaranteed home game will give them a little bit of fire, knowing just it's a chance of a signature win? Just what's your vibe heading into this one?
Yeah, you'd hope so. I mean, I would hope that every game they play from here on out, there is urgency. And we haven't always seen that this year. But I would, you know, I think they realized that, like I said earlier, time's slipping away. And from Saturday and that point forward, I would hope that we see, you know, a team that gets after it. They might not win. I mean, Illinois is the more talented team. But I would hope they go down with a fight and you know, play hard on both ends of the court. Because I think this stretch run, it doesn't determine their legacy, but it contributes pretty heavily to their legacy. I mean, I look at things a little differently than people. I don't know how you're going to look at a senior group of seniors. I mean, for me, the Big Ten title last year will always be the number one item on their resume, regardless of what happened this year. It's been a disappointing season. Micah Potter even said the other day, it's been a disappointing season. So even if they flame out the rest of the way, I still think that was a remarkable accomplishment. One of the best stories I've ever covered was them winning the Big Ten title last year. So that's part of it. And you would have liked to have ended stronger, yes. And maybe they still can, but it doesn't take away from me what they did last year. And even the year before, they were part of a team that had, you know, these guys were freshmen, or most of them were freshmen, when they did not make the NCAA tournament and the streak ended. They bounced back that next season and got back to the tournament. And I thought that was a kind of a step in the right direction. So this group's been through a lot, and, you know, for their sake, I know they want to go out strong, even though it hasn't to this point been kind of what they hope for.
Yeah. I think I'm closer and to in line with your thinking. I think if you had to kind of pin down what their legacy is, it would be probably more of what if, you know, because what if they could have played that tournament last year? They were, you know, not at least one of the top two or three hottest teams in the country going into the Big Ten tournament. I mean, not the best, but the hottest, and playing the best that they had all season. They went all through all the things that they went through. I mean, starting even with Micah Potter not being eligible first half of the year, then Kobe stuff, Eric Kellen stuff, all that stuff. And then just not being able to finish that season because of something completely out of their control, like COVID. It just kind of throws that wrench in of, you know, what could have happened, and what would this year look like if they could have played last year? Is this, you know, if they could have played that tournament last season, do all these guys come back, is this team what it was? Because that was kind of the offseason storyline. It's like, try to play this season throughout the pandemic, but get this team back together and try to finish off what you started or weren't able to finish last season. I just think, regardless of what happens this year, especially if it's a flame out, then it kind of cements it as what if and what could have been.
Yeah, I mean, like, that season ended last year, and I would have liked to have seen them get a chance to play in the NCAA tournament, just because those guys all deserve a chance, especially Brevin Pritzel, right? To have his season and his career end the way it did was, you know, sucked. I don't know that I thought the team was going to make a Final Four run, though, right?
No,
I
mean, that's fair.
I had a lot of questions about that team that have popped up this year. You know, how do they match up athletically with some of the best teams in the country? You know, can they go cold? They've proven last year they can go cold at times. I think that's just going to happen at some point. You got to win four games to get to the Final Four. I think to expect them to shoot really well in all four games would have been a lot to ask. So I don't think, you know, mythical national championship aside,
yes,
I don't think they probably would have gotten the Final Four last year, but you still would have liked to see them get a chance. But you're right. There are a lot of what ifs, that'll come out of that. And, you know, this year it's been a weird year. It was a weird off season with the pandemic. It's been a weird year. You know, these guys don't get to really see their family and friends very much. And this is every team, so I'm not making excuses for them, but it's not been the season that they ever could have hoped for or drawn up. It's just not been a good senior season to live, whether you're winning or losing. So, you know, I do feel kind of bad for them in that regard, that they didn't have a proper finale to kind of hang their hats on.
Sure. And I mean, this has been a conversation all year, but because of that, do you think that any of these guys come back? I mean, we've talked before about the guard issue that they're going to have next year if they don't come back. So, I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm no closer to having that answer than I was a couple weeks ago. Other than I think at this point, this is without any inside knowledge, I would be surprised if any of them come back. I really, you know, I've kind of put four guys in the group of gone for sure, and that's Potter, Reavers, Ford, and Trice. I just think those guys, if they choose to, can go make some money overseas or wherever. That leaves Davison and Anderson. You know, with Davison, I just think he looks tired and he looks banged up, and I don't know how much more he wants to put his body through another season. Anderson's the same way. He'll be a sixth year senior next year. And, you know, that's a long time to be in college, and with no guarantee that he's going to play a ton more next year. I don't know if he wants to put his body through it. So I don't know. None of those guys have publicly come out and said their plans for sure. And I'm not sure they'll do so this week either. But at this point, if you had to ask me, I don't think any of them will be back.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I thought for a while, potentially Davison, but then I think you said it really perfectly there. In the last month or so, there's just been a number of things, or a number of plays that the guy used to make. I mean, and that's a product of throwing your body around for 3.5-4 years of taking charges and diving and doing all the stuff that he did from the jump. I mean, eventually it's going to catch up with you. I think it has a little bit, and we've seen it on both ends. So I thought for most of the season, Davison would be back, just because I truly believe he does love being at Wisconsin playing college basketball. I wonder, as you said, if physically he wants to try to put himself through that again. And not only that, an off season where you're going to have to work, like you're going to be out together working more and doing, you know, theoretically more normal off season basketball things, which are tougher on your body than whatever they did this season. So I'm with you there.
He wants to be a coach someday. So coming back wouldn't be the worst in that regard. Just, you know, you could almost be a player coach next year and kind of learn more stuff. I think they'd welcome him back, certainly, but I just don't know. I don't know where he is. And he looks frustrated. You know, his body language is different this year, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a target of fans, of referees, and I can't imagine that's a lot of fun. So I'd be surprised if he returns.
Yeah. All right, let's quickly go through this Big Ten Player of the Year race. No Badgers are going to be in this discussion, unfortunately, just not the year for these guys, but it's starting to look like it's a two-man race between Iowa's Lou Garza and then Io DeSunlu from down in Illinois. And people keep talking about these triple doubles for DeSunlu, which they're cool and everything like that, but it has become the most overrated statistical like feat in basketball. And when you're a guy like DeSunlu, where you touch the, or you start the possession on offense every time with the ball and you're a good scorer, like it's not like out of the realm of possibility that getting a triple double, like not saying that's not hard and you have to play a good game, but it's not like this astronomical feat like people are acting like it is. And I think maybe it's just to create some discussion for the player of the year race, because Garza has been statistically the best player in the conference. But I like the fact that it's a two-man race, and I do believe if you're just talking about value to his team, DeSunlu is probably, you know, on par with Garza. I just don't know if you can overcome what Garza's been putting up stat-wise.
Yeah, he's just a machine. I mean, the ways he finds to score and just keeps going, he's relentless. He's exactly what you want in a big man. He just works so hard to get positioned and never seems to get tired. I would say, you know, I was entertaining the possibility of voting for DeSunlu. If Illinois would have made a run at the Big Ten title, like if they win the Big Ten title, and the DeSunlu's got the stats he does, I think I was going to give it a lot of thought. And I guess I haven't decided yet, so I'll still give it some thought. But the triple-double at Minnesota was pretty manufactured. I mean, that was a 30-point game. He's still in under 4 minutes left and just grabbing rebounds to get that number. That, you know, that rubbed me the wrong way. And then last night, they didn't even – I don't know. Did you watch the very end of that game, Michigan State?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They didn't show the basket, but – Michigan State is holding the ball, right? Like basically saying, okay, we're beating you. This game's over. We're not doing anything. And Dasumu just keeps playing defense and pokes the ball away and goes down and scores a layup as time expires, which I don't get. Like if you're going to be ticked off when a team dunks on you in that situation, then just stop playing. They've stopped playing, so you should stop playing. So that rubbed me the wrong way too. But that's not going to be the difference in me voting Garza over Dasumu. I just think he's had the better season, and he's the player of the year in the Big Ten. And I right now that's the way I'm leaning. The bigger thing to me is who I'm going to put with those two on the All Big Ten team.
Right, and you have to inform me of how this is voted, but like, is it two forward spots, or does the spots matter? Like, how do you?
So I'm in two voting pools. One is the actual official Big Ten, and spots don't matter. They say just give us the best five. And I can't remember over the years how I've kind of determined that, because it is a question this year. I also, for the AP, am on that voting panel, and they want more structure. Either two guards and three front court players, or three guards and a couple front court players. They did say this year that if you can make a compelling four guard to one forward lineup, go for it. I think it's the exact opposite this year. I think you're.
Yeah, I was just saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the challenge. You got Garza and Dasumu who are givens, but what do you do with Michigan, who's going to win the Big Ten title? Dickinson's got the stats, great player, right? Like he's a terrific player and probably deserves first team mention. But Isaiah Livers has had a really, really good season and I think could be a first team guy. I personally, the guy I love most on that team is Franz Wagner. I think he does it on both ends of the court. I can see him getting a case for first team. So that's a tricky one is which one and do more than one deserve first team All Big Ten mention? Ohio State's a little bit of a question too. Like Dwayne Washington's their leading scorer. He's got the stats, but I think EJ Liddell is probably the most improved player in the league this year. And I think he's a first team guy. Trace Jackson Davis from Indiana has put up great numbers, but that team's not going to finish as high. I'm always curious what voters do with that. Travion Williams from Purdue is a guy that's, you know, first team quality. You know, Wieskamp from Iowa is a guy that you can consider too. So there's Kofi Coburn from Illinois. There's probably eight guys that I think you can make a case for. Do you put two Illinois guys on and only one Michigan guy? It's a hard vote this year.
Yeah. And it's going to be funny. Like however voters shake it out, it sounds like at least the second team is probably going to be like all Michigan and Ohio State, because not a lot of those guys are going to be able to crack that first team with some of the other guys that the stats that they have.
Yeah, I went through it the other day, and my top 10 is pretty easy to figure out. It's just where to put those, you know, what pieces to put where. Actually, I think there's 11. I think there's going to be a pretty good player that gets left off one of the first two teams, because here's the list. Garza, Dasumu, Jackson Davis, Travion Williams, EJ Liddell, Dickinson, Livers, Coburn, Wieskamp, Carr from Minnesota, Washington from Ohio State, and Wagner. That's 11 guys for 10 spots. So somebody's going to get left off one of those first two teams. One of those guys is going to be a third team guy. It might be Marcus Carr from Minnesota, because again, if you finish in 11th place or 12th place, it's hard for me to have much sympathy for you as an individual player.
Yeah, no, I hear you there. If just as a supporter of all thing big people, if you want to go a three center lineup with Dickinson, Dasumu, and Garza, or not Dasumu, Coburn and Garza, I'd be awful.
And I don't think that way. Like, I think if you're one of the five best players in the Big Ten, I'm going to vote for you that way. I don't have this hard and fast rule that says, oh, you need two guards, because, you know, if you stick to the rule of two guards this year, you're either going to have to put Marcus Carr, Dwayne Washington, or force feed basically Joe Wieskamp, who apparently they're considering a shooting guard in the national awards, by the way. I don't think he's a shooting guard.
I saw that the other day. That was.
But if you're considered a two, you better be able to guard a two. And I don't think he's going to guard a two.
Yeah, that's one of those, manipulation might be too strong of a word, but kind of just silly suggestions that are trying to goose some numbers for the award, which is always funny to see, which I get. Like, if you're the SID at Iowa, like, that's your job, is to give a kid the best chance he can have to get a national award. But yeah, it's kind of funny.
One quick UW thing. I mean, I haven't gone this far in my voting stuff, but I do think Trice will be a third teamer.
I think that's probably the best. And it's tough with the names you just listed out. Maybe Potter can sneak into the last third team spot, but I doubt it.
It's tough because if the coach isn't even starting him in the starting lineup.
It's hard to call him.
You know, does that lose him votes in the.
Yeah.
And he's probably started too many games now to get sixth man consideration, you know. True. I haven't looked at bench players to see like where if a Jonathan Davis would have a chance at that award. Or if Jonathan Davis will be on the all-freshman team. I haven't really looked into that either. I would think he's got a pretty good case for having a chance at all-freshman.
Yeah, that sounds about right. All right, quickly here, as Jim and I wrap up this portion of the podcast, I want to talk a little bit about football. I mentioned it's been a slow week, but Tuesday night news breaks that Quintez Cephas, former Wisconsin wide receiver, is suing UW. For damages for violating his Title IX provisions and for a breach of contract stemming from his expulsion after the sexual assault allegations back in 2018-19. This is a quote from the lawsuit. He's seeking to push, UW is seeking to push for harsh male prosecutions in order to remedy its longstanding failure to address sexual assault complaints. And another quote, Cephas was the perfect candidate for the university to prove its investigative efforts and punish accused males in a high-profile way because of his status on the football team. Jim and I were talking before we started recording, guys, and you've heard us talk about the Quintez Cephas case last or in 2019. I just don't have a ton to add, Jim. I know you kind of feel the same way. We'll see how this plays out. We'll talk about it as things progress through the courts and whatever happens here. None of the football coaches were listed as co-defendants. It's mostly just administrators from the school that were more responsible for the expulsion part. But just not a ton to add here. It's a bad situation for everyone. I think everyone involved would say that it's a regrettable night all around. But just I don't know. I just don't really have anything to add at the moment.
No, this doesn't surprise me. I figured it was coming at some point. So I can't say I was overly surprised and I'm curious to see how it plays out. I mean, probably in a settlement, right? Like this, typically these things end that way. So I don't know that we're gonna get any answers and just hope that people can learn from it. I don't know. I want to hear more from both sides before I decide what was the best way to handle it. But it's, again, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. All right. Let's leave it there because that's about all we have. All right. Jim, thanks so much for jumping on this morning. And we will take another quick break before we bring on Todd and talk about some hockey. All right, everybody. We are back with Todd Molesky here to talk about Badgers men's and women hockey. Todd has a microphone. So this is obviously going to be way more official than everything Jim and I do. So
official technology, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So we will be already sound better here the second half of the show. But let's start with the men's team. Todd, not too much regular season left. They've got a series against Ohio State this weekend and Michigan State next weekend before they start heading into conference and NCAA tournament play. Give you guys a quick primer if you haven't been following closely yet of the men's hockey team. They're 15-8-1, 13-6-1 in the Big Ten. They've already won more games this year than they have last year. They're the number 5 team in the country right now. The Big Ten tournaments is scheduled right now for March 18th through 20th, but Todd actually just reported yesterday they might get moved up to give them some more time between that and the NCAA tournament, which will start later in March. So, Todd, I want to start with just as you've been covering this team and following throughout the year, what are some of the things that really stuck out to you? What's kind of been the change that's made them a better team than last year? Because when you came on the show last year, we talked about the disappointment that this team just wasn't living up to the hype and the talent that they had on it.
Yeah, right. I mean, I remember last year it being, everyone kind of pointed as that year as being the year that there was going to be a turnaround in the program, or at least that you were going to see the results of the turnaround in the program, because they had 3 first round NHL draft picks. You had Alex Turcotte, Cole Caulfield, Keandre Miller. you had Wyatt Kelnick leading the defensive core as a veteran guy. You had more experienced players, but it just never came together. And what there are a couple of things I point to in this year, and one of them is comparing it to last year. That group didn't seem necessarily all on the same page. And this group, you can see it. I mean, even though I'm not able to see practices and those kind of things like I did in years past, in games, just the way they act to each other, around each other, respond to each other, this is a group that's a lot more pointed in the same direction. And so I think that's one of the big things. But on the ice, goaltending has been better. Special teams has been much better. And those are, I mean, if you're going to break down a game, you can get by on those two things alone.
Yeah, right.
that's those changes are big enough to explain, you know, what's gone on here. So I think those are probably the two biggest things on the ice, but then you get in kind of those intrinsic factors of having a team that's a little bit better, better match for each other. Maybe.
That's interesting to think because we all heard, I mean, we all know this offseason was just crazy for every college athletic team. And I mean, one of the things that we heard through football, basketball, all the sports that we cover is that these guys can really only be around each other. And it's maybe only when they're in practice or weightlifting and things like that, but they're really trying to close down their bubbles and make sure that they're not exposing themselves to too many people outside. So do you think that just that's had a positive effect? Like it's kind of just brought them a little bit closer together than maybe they had been before.
I think, you know, they've said that and it's hard to know for sure because they can say that and it, you know,
it sounds nice. And yeah, it's
exactly. And we don't know who they're seeing, how big their bubble actually is. You know, where they're going after practice, are they going right back to their rooms or are they all, you know, joining other people? We don't know that for sure without being around them all the time. So, that's the caveat, but, from what they say and from the experience, you know, of seeing them play. Yeah. I do get that sense that they're making the most of whatever this is. Right. And that's, I think been one of the things that if you, it doesn't really matter the sport, when something like this is thrown at you, not to say that this has ever been thrown at anyone before, you know, last March, but something, you know, you get injuries, you get things that disrupt the flow just in general. How do you respond to it? What do you do as a group to make yourself either better out of it or just get through it? And I think when you have somebody like, and I'm going to point to one guy, but it's really more of a group effort. Ty Emberson is the captain. When you have a guy like him leading the group, he's a no-nonsense, you know, get things done kind of guy, but he likes to have fun. I mean, he's no different than any other, you know, 20, 21 year old kid. I mean, he's not, you know, cracking the whip on everyone, I don't think, to do work all the time, but I mean,
right.
He is a kind of leader that, the effort that he puts out, makes everyone recognize that and say, I need to be somewhere along those lines. And with the young players, I think you've especially seen that out of them this season, that they're following a little bit of that lead. And you know, the veterans, I don't know if all of them had to necessarily come around to that, but I think there's a lot more of that mentality around
Sure. this season. Kind of like a wake up call. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And then I think any team that's got the disappointment of last season, and kind of not living up to the expectations, and not only from the outside, but inside. I mean, that I remember reading some of your preseason stories last year, and that team thought, hey, we are a national championship level contending team. Yep. And pretty quickly we are not. So I can't imagine how tough that was to kind of live through that last season. So you come into this year and it's coming together a little bit better. I'm sure it's helping a lot just attitude wise and guys, you know, continuing to work hard.
Totally. It's I wrote about it, I think last week, you know, that their improved attitude was kind of, they said that was, you know, one of the reasons for their better record this season, but it's a chicken or egg thing, right? Yeah, do they have a better attitude because they have a better record, or do they have a better record because they have a better attitude? And the answer is somewhere out there, maybe unexplainable. It's obviously a little bit of both categories, but that's dawned on me in writing that well, you can't really explain that. You don't know what's on what side of that.
Yeah, for sure. And one last thing just on this team from a general standpoint before we get into more specific things, you mentioned the special teams, and I was looking at the stats last night as we were getting ready to do the podcast. They're scoring on 30.6% of their power plays, and maybe if you, I'm not going to proclaim to be the biggest hockey guy, but of every three penalties, you're scoring a goal. Like that's, yeah, you're putting yourself in a great position, seeing as there's, you know, between four and five penalties a game usually.
Yeah. And there's a little bit of an interesting dynamic in it this year that I haven't really done the numbers nationally, but in Wisconsin games, there's a lot, maybe not a lot, there's fewer penalties being called or fewer power plays being given out. Mm. And I don't know if, you know, some people have said, is that a factor of, you know, referees being less swayed by fans, by, you know, noises, you know, you hear that a groan or a bunch of people crying about something and that's going to get in the referee's head. I don't know if that's the case or not, but it's an interesting thought. So in that you're getting fewer chances to be able to score on, you know, one a game, if you get three chances in a game, if you score on one, that's a huge turning point. And the way that the Badgers have put together their power play unit with their five best forwards, normally you have a defenseman on there in some respect, but they've put five forwards out there thinking that these are our best guys, best options to score. Sure. And to change the course of a game, it's worked out maybe better than they thought it would. But it does get into the talent that they have. Not to say that they didn't have that talent last year. It's just, again, it's maybe in a better state of mind and in better better groupings, better pairings to make things work this year.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And one story that we know you got coming up this week, Ty Belton Bice, has been a really key contributor to this team and a local kid. So what can people look for on Madison.com coming up this weekend heading into this Ohio State series?
Well, Ty Belton Bice is a player who started he's from Madison, played at Memorial, went to Harvard to start his career. He was, after 2 years there, he was put on an academic suspension because he had got a failed one class and gotten a D in another one. And that was an automatic thing. And I wrote about this a couple of years ago, he was going through, you know, a pretty severe bout with depression at the time. Mm. He came through that, got the right, medications to work through that. Didn't get, I think it's called reconsideration to get back into Harvard for what would be his junior season. And then was kind of off on his own. Did he want to come back here? Did he want to go somewhere else? He ended up coming to practices here at Wisconsin. We'd see him in the crowd a lot. Sitting by himself, watching practice. He was kind of in the works of joining the team, but it wasn't an official thing yet because he had to finish, I think it's an associate's degree at MATC for a semester there in the fall of, I think, 2018, if I'm doing my math right. So he had to do that to be able to qualify to get into UW and then, you know, obviously to join the team and for practice that one season while he was in a transfer year. So it's really, there's a lot of factors in the story that are just, you know, interesting in from a human perspective, but then he also has a season like he's having this year, which he's part of the top line that's just on a tear lately, him and Linus Weisbach and Cole Caulfield, something like 17 even strength goals in the last 14 games. So not even including the power play goals that they're a part of, you know, they're scoring more than a goal a game just from that line, since the start of 2021. And that's been a big part of why the Badgers have, have jumped to the top five in the polls. And last week we saw he scored two goals for the first time since his freshman year, two goals in a game for the first time in his freshman year. And he scored the tying goal in the last minute. It was just one of those things where, you know, you saw everything from him last weekend. His passes were just were exquisite. He had a behind the back pass to Linus Weisbach on a goal. It was incredible. Another one to Caulfield, and then he scores two goals. And so it's really come, you know, this is the last weekend that the Badgers play at home. So it's a little bit of that senior weekend without a senior
celebration,
know, like ceremony. So yeah, it's an interesting time to look at what he's done in his 2 years, and especially how it's ramped up in the last, you know, 6-7 weeks, really.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And it's cool to see somebody that had to go through some of that stuff, come out the other side and get back to where they wanted to be, because, you know, the mental health aspect of it, a lot of people aren't able to do that, you know, aren't able to get back to what they once were or where they wanted to be. So it's cool to see him doing that. And it's tough. And I think that's one of those things where we're getting better at recognizing this stuff and pushing people, but people recognizing that they can get that help. But it's awesome when you see those success stories, because who knows how many people will, you know, kind of maybe recognize some of those symptoms or think to themselves like, hey, if he could do it, I can too.
Yeah. I mean, it's so much better at recognizing it and getting kind of the right resources directed to people, but it is right. Obviously still going to be a long way to go, and always will be probably to getting the right, you know, treatment and resources out there to people. And so, yeah, hopefully, I mean, there's a positive outcome here, and hopefully that maybe, you know, means something to some people that could use a positive outcome.
Right. No, absolutely. And one of the things about this Badger team is they're scoring about four goals a game. I think it's like 3.7 and some change. Mm-hmm. Cole Caulfield, you mentioned a couple of times, leading the way with 19 goals. You've written about him a lot, obviously, ever since he came here, number one draft pick of what's the Canadians, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Canadians. But we've seen, I think, just you wrote about this. It was either earlier this week or last week that the overall, he can always score. That was never a question with him. Right. But the overall game and the passing, being able to get his teammates involved, moving the puck around, that seems to be the thing that he's really stepped up a notch this season.
Yeah, it's. You know, we saw last year he scored 19 goals as a freshman, led the Big Ten in scoring. It was, you know, that part of his game has always been good. He's got just an incredible shot, can put it exactly where he wants it, basically. And that's something that, I mean, you really take for granted after a while, after you see him, that how unique, or, you know, it's not something you get out of people every day, in college especially. But you have to be, you know, when you're asked to be on the ice as much as he is, you have to be good in your own end of the ice too, because you're not always going to have the puck and be in the other team's end of the ice. It's going to come back down and you have to be able to defend. Mm-hmm. And if you're ending up, you know, a negative or barely a positive player in terms of, you know, goals you're on plus the ice for, yeah, as opposed to against, yeah, that doesn't necessarily help your team out in general. Yeah, scoring is great, but if you're not able to help keep it out of your own net, it's really not overall a great thing. So this year, his effort, I think just knowing where he should be has taken a big jump in his defensive zone when he doesn't have the puck. And so he's been able to track back and break up chances. He's been able to, you know, just be more of a 200 foot player is what everyone calls it, you know, that you can play as well, maybe not as well in your own zone as when you have the puck in the offensive zone, but still good enough to get the job done. And that's the biggest thing we've seen this season, is that, yeah, he's still scoring goals. He's getting all the chances and maybe even a little bit more than he was, but he's playing so much better and being able to generate more chances out of the defensive zone.
Gotcha. And I don't know if they have like straw polls or where things sit for player of the year right now, but Caulfield, I've seen you talk about it. And then, you know, other publications talk about him being in the running with the top three or four guys for the National Player of the Year award. That's a Jim Johansson, right? I just want to make sure I don't have them mixed up.
Hobie Baker Award.
Hobie Baker Award. Excuse me. Okay. So what are some of the things that maybe stand out about him that make him a candidate for that? Or, and who are, do you think some of the main competition that he has?
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think the, one of the biggest things is that it's, you have to be on a team that does pretty well. I mean, it's enough to have some, you know, the talent to be recognized as one of the best players in the country. But if you're on a mediocre team, that, that really kind of pulls you down in that. And so I think this season, the Badgers have, you know, you mentioned they're fifth in the polls. So they're getting that attention nationally, and people are seeing, I think, that it's, you know, when he scores every other night or every night, you know, you come to realize that, yeah, he is a big factor in the team being fifth in the country. So obviously there's more to it than that. We talked about the special teams, the goaltending, but when you're able to have a player like him get the attention that he does, just because there's so many people up in Montreal that are so interested in him that he gets a little bit of, you know, social traction every time he scores or every time he has an impressive pass or that's
in French too, which I always find interesting.
Right. Exactly. that the 7 years, 7-8 years of French that I took in high school and college are really paying off by the way.
I can imagine.
Yes. You know, when you get those kind of things, that I think is what builds a little bit of that buzz. Cause, you know, hockey is a tight community, but it's still hard to, you know, to know what somebody on the other side of the country is doing a lot of the times. You know, you're a lot of the games are Friday and Saturday nights, so they're at the same times. That's changed a little bit this season. So it can be hard to, you know, to see everything that happens when it's all happening at the same time. But I think with Caulfield, you kind of have that built in. He came into the season as one of the people that everyone kind of already knew about from a national perspective, just from what he did last year and the pedigree that he had coming in. So he's definitely built on that. So yeah. I think that does put him in the mix, you know, probably in that, you know, that if you're looking at players that are a potential for the Hobie Baker Award, North Dakota has a couple. Shane Pinto is a really good player who's generated a lot of points. There's a few players out of Hockey East that you start to look at. Matt Boldy is one of the players that's kind of always mentioned with him, with Caulfield, because they're former national team teammates. They've played on the World Junior team together. And he gets a lot of attention out East. It's tough to say who's in the mix right now. At least for me, because I feel like it's been such a weird season. Some teams have played, you know, 13 games. The Badgers have played 24. It's hard for me to, you know, weigh team versus team. And this gets into the trouble of picking the NCAA tournament teams too, when you've got, you know, a team that's played, you know, basically half the schedule that the Badgers have, and you're trying to compare them and then compare them individually. So a lot of people that are much smarter than me will get to be factors in those decisions. So I'm happy to be kind of on the outside, just reporting on that.
Yeah, no, I hear you there. Well, you mentioned the NCAA tournament, and it's a little bit less than a month away right now. What you mentioned, the improved special teams and goaltending and the way this team can score. I mean, that to me, that sounds like a recipe for a team that can catch fire and make a run at this tournament. Just when you look at some of the other, maybe the teams they would have to run into or an area that they'd still need to improve on, where do you think, what are some of the prospects that they have for this NCAA tournament?
Well, it's, to me, it's always been, the NCAA tournament has been something that you just have to get in and then anyone's a possibility to win it. I mean, it's a 4-game tournament then to win. And if you get to this point and you can't win 4 games in a row, you probably shouldn't be in the NCAA tournament to begin with. So, I mean, the teams that are right up there at the top of the rankings and have been for most of the year, Boston College, North Dakota, Minnesota State, and Minnesota, you know, which had a 10-0 start and then had a kind of an iffy 10-game stretch after that where they were 5-5, but they've kind of picked it up again since then.
And then wasn't that 5-5 stretch when Wisconsin waxed them that weekend?
Yeah, right. They started Wisconsin, gave them their first loss on one weekend in a split, and then went up to Minnesota a few weeks later and won both of the games. So yeah, that was part of that stretch. So I think that's kind of that core group that you're talking about as being probably the biggest contenders because they've been kind of hanging around there all season. Now Wisconsin has jumped up in the second half. They were 5-5 at the break. So not exactly, you know, world beaters, but they were okay. In the second half, they've done a lot better and kind of thrown themselves into that consideration too, as being one of those contenders. Then you've got, you know, I've got Wisconsin's kind of in that secondary group of, you know, Minnesota Duluth is still the 2-time defending champs because there wasn't a tournament last year. Right. St. Cloud State's been pretty good. Kind of the NCHC, the other Western power league, I guess you would say, is, you know, where you're going to always look to for teams that are going to be in the contending mix. I mean, then Boston College, obviously, is, like I mentioned, is up there. But Boston University has come in late. They got a really late start. They didn't get to play much or if at all in the first half of the year because of COVID.
Right.
And they've come out, I think, are 9-2 to start the season, season. So you start to wonder, is that a team that's going to be a factor in it? They've got the talent to do it, obviously, but, you know, can they overcome that late start, or is that a benefit to them? Maybe even if you get into late in the season, hard to know that for sure. But so yeah, there's a good group of teams that are going to be in the mix, and like I said, you just got to get in and then
see what happens, see what kind of matchups you get.
Yep,
for sure. So make sure you guys are on Madison.com reading all of Todd's work covering this men's hockey team, because lots of things are shaping up for them. This could be a pretty special, you know, 5-6 weeks coming up here for them. So make sure you're on Madison.com checking all that out. Let's jump over to the women's side here quick, Todd, as we start wrapping up. Primer on them. They're 11-2-1 going into this weekend. They're number one team in the country. Only losses this year against Ohio State, which is number three in the country. So it's, you know, not like they have bad losses on the resume. It's, you know, pretty elite teams that they've, or one elite team that they've split some series with. One more series this weekend with Minnesota Duluth, and then their NCAA tournament starts March 15th, and it spans that whole week of that week in March. So this was a little bit more expected for the women's side, just with the talent they had and the season that they had last season. I think people were kind of coming into the year. I believe they were number one ranked coming into the season, if not top two or three. And then they kind of held there throughout the year. And they were setting up for another deep tournament run before COVID hit and canceled that year. So, or canceled that tournament. When you look at them and the talent's been there and then the kind of the infrastructure is set up there, but what do you think that makes this team as good as it is this season?
Well, it's, when you're talking about the Badger women's team, it's usually about the depth, because a lot of teams will be able to put out one good line, maybe two good lines. The Badgers will put out three good lines plus maybe a fourth with solid depth at defense and usually a pretty good goalie. And that's a formula that's pretty tough to beat in women's hockey. And especially, you know, this year, you know, women's hockey in Division One is already kind of a small enough group. It's gotten smaller this year because there's some teams that aren't playing. The Ivy League schools are out. Mm-hmm. A couple of other Eastern schools aren't playing this year. So it's really a tighter group around the country, talent wise. And you know, the Badgers actually benefited from that in a way too. They at midseason they got a player who was originally intending to start the season this season at Princeton, but Princeton isn't playing this year. and Lacey Eden, a forward, transferred in at midseason at the semester break, and was a pretty good force right away. Scored a few goals, scored on her first weekend against Minnesota, has scored since then, and has really kind of been established herself as a pretty important part of the top six forward core in the last few weeks. So the team as a whole gets you, like you said, they start the season as an expected to be in the number one, number two, number three range, and they haven't done anything to give you any reason to dispute that yet. So the weird thing is, we're at the end of the season, we're talking about 14 games they've played. This is normally when they would have played 30 by now, and so it's a little bit hard to know exactly what you have from the limited amount of play that they've done. Now, having said that, of those 14 games, 8 of them have been against either Minnesota or Ohio State. So 1 and 3, 2 and 3 in the country, or 4, somewhere in that range.
Right.
And now this weekend they're playing Minnesota Duluth, which is number 7 in the country and has a chance to pass the Badgers for the WCHA regular season title if they get more than, I think, 4 points, something like that, out of the series. So even though it's been limited, there's been a test almost every weekend for the Badgers.
Yeah, there haven't been off games, really.
right. And so that does seem to get you ready for the rest of the season now. I mean, from here on out, it's you're going to be playing a top 10 team pretty much every game, almost guaranteed, right? Mm-hmm. Be it next weekend, obviously this weekend against Duluth. Next weekend is the WCHA tournament where it's 4 teams. It'll be Wisconsin, Minnesota, Ohio State, and Duluth in some order, depending on how the Badgers and Bulldog series goes this weekend. And then after that, you go into that week of the NCAA tournament, which is normally, 1 weekend at the home rinks of 4 of the teams, and then they go to the Frozen Four, the 4 winners. But this year, because of COVID, and they're going to play the tournament all in Erie, Pennsylvania. So they go there, play, I think it's on a Monday or Tuesday, play the quarterfinal games. Then the semifinals are Thursday and the championship is Saturday. So it's a big testing stretch, but they've faced it before the season. So I think they're in a good position to handle that. They know what's coming at them, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
That's totally fair. And maybe most importantly, they have Darryl Watts, who is one of the best players in women's hockey, who leads the team with 25 points, 13 goals, 12 assists. And what I thought was crazy, not that you would expect her to not have a good number here, but her plus minus, you were mentioning it earlier, it's Cole Caulfield, but her plus minus is plus 21 on the year in 14 games. So, I mean, when she's out there, the Badgers are pretty tough to beat. So she's got the potential to win the player of the year for the women's side as well. And I mean, you're, I don't know if people know this, but Todd's pretty much a college hockey historian. He works very closely with the USCHO and lots of the organizational stuff on that side that really does a good job of keeping the history going of college hockey. Do you remember a year of a team having a men's and women's winner for the player of the year?
I looked that up. There has never happened before.
Never happened. Okay. So
the Patty Kazmaier Award and the Hobey Baker Award, right, have come from the same school. Now, it's been interesting. A lot of times there's been I think there was a year where it was a Harvard player on the men's side and a Northeastern player on the women's side. So it's been like in the same city, but never the same school. So, I look back to 2006 when the Badgers won both the men's and women's national championships. Sarah Bauer won the Patty Kazmaier Award for the Badgers women, and Brian Elliott was one of the 3 finalists for the men, but he lost to Matt Carl from Denver. So that was probably as close as the Badgers, that is as close as the Badgers have ever come to having both of those in the same year. But it really does make you appreciate what those 2 players are doing, Darryl Watts and Cole Caulfield, that they're both leading the country in scoring, that they're both in that mix for their player of the year awards. That doesn't happen much. I mean, that's something that you have to recognize the the skill and the talent and, you know, the circumstances. You know, this is a tough year to be playing in, given everything that's, you know, kind of hanging over you as you kind of, as you walk around, right? You don't want to be the one to have COVID, especially now as you get into the playoffs, to have COVID.
Now it's like you got to lock it down even more.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a really rough way of ending your season. I mean, not that last season wasn't rough, having the whole, everything pulled out from everyone, but this, you know, there's a lot hanging over players this season. So yeah, that's to be able to go through the season like they have and be as successful as they have, pretty worthy of recognition that they have both done it at the same school. So yeah, that's something we'll be watching over the next few weeks. The Patty Kazmaier top 10 comes out, I believe Thursday this week. I don't know the time on that, but that's, you know, I would imagine Watts will be in there. There may be another, you know, Badger player or two. It's been a while since there hasn't been a Badger player in the top 10 of the Patty Kazmaier award.
Sure.
But, and they've had their share of winners too. So, it definitely does, kind of put the spotlight on Wisconsin in terms of the success that the teams are having this year too.
Yeah. And that's the toughest part, because Wisconsin has a pretty loyal following, I feel like, here in the area that would love to be able to watch these teams play this year. And it just, of course, and then both of them are doing so well, and then it's just not able to happen. It's just kind of a unfortunate circumstance of all of it. And
yeah.
Todd, as we come close to the end here, I just wanted to ask, just the women's team has been, the women's program has been this consistent and seems to be always at least pushing in the last 4 or 5 years for a national championship type of run. Is there anything that you see in the times that you've watched this team that might hold them back? I mean, you mentioned the depth earlier and they've got a good goaltender. Just what do you think is something that maybe if they weren't able to make a deep run, you know, X would be the culprit besides COVID, maybe.
Yeah, I think of the couple of games that they've lost, when they've lost to Ohio State has found a way to score early and then play a kind of a shutdown style where it makes it really tough for the Badgers to get scoring opportunities. And so that may be the formula to beat Wisconsin, is if you can get an early goal and lock down on defense. Sure. I mean, that's easier said than done. Obviously the Badgers can throw a bunch of different things at you, but in the times when they haven't done as well, it's been that, you know, maybe it's an off night for Darryl Watts, or the, you know, the other team is able to key on her and lock her down. Or that they don't get some of that secondary scoring that's been, you know, helpful throughout the season, not just making it a one line team. You get, you know, two and three lines and a few defensemen scoring. There's, you know, it's not an obvious thing that, you know, they're destined to win every game they're going to play, obviously. So that's
right.
It could be any number of things that doesn't go right. You have a bad night in goaltending. I mean, Kennedy Blair has been pretty good most of the season as a senior grad transfer from Mercyhurst, in one of those situations where you didn't really know for sure what you're going to get out of that at the start of the season, because the Badgers had lost Kristen Campbell, who was so good for them for 3 years. And it's there's just so many of those, you know, you think things are going right, but you never really know until you get into a game how everything's going to play out, whether everyone's on the same page that day. I mean, because if you put it on paper, yeah, the Badgers look like a pretty good team, but everyone's got to be going for that to happen. And if it doesn't happen on one day, and if it's the wrong day for it to happen, it's an NCAA tournament or something like that.
Right.
That wraps it up pretty quick.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. All right, Todd. Well, thank you so much for jumping on with us here. As we start wrapping up the show, make sure you're on Madison.com reading all of Jim's basketball stuff, reading all of Todd's hockey stuff coming up. It's a very exciting time. It's busy time. Everybody is, you know, running around trying to figure out where they got to be. You're finally locked into, you know, Erie for the NCAA tournament, assuming everything goes right and the Badgers go there. And Jim's going to maybe have to move to Indiana. And
let's see. Yeah, we should get a condo there as a company, right?
Yeah, yeah, for real. So we'll see how that goes. And we'll see if anything happens with football that's worth writing in the next few days here. So make sure you're Madison.com checking all that out. But For Tom Molesky, I'm Colton Bartholomew. Thank you guys very much for listening.